All of the newest episodes of Note to Self are now available on the Luminary podcast app. It's free to download, and you can also listen to other podcasts from WNYC studios like Radiolab, Two Dope Queens, Snap Judgment, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, and others. Luminary Premium is the only place where you can enjoy the entire new season of Note to Self, plus new original podcasts you won't find anywhere else, from Trevor Noah, Roxane Gay, Guy Raz, Lena Dunham, and many more. And you can enjoy them ad-free. Start your free trial by going to luminary.link/note to self or download the Luminary app for free.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Dr. Cheryl Olson is one of the experts that Vice President Biden spoke to on the subject of violence and video games, and she's the co-author of the book Grand Theft Childhood, The Surprising Truth About Violent Video Games and What Parents Can Do. Dr. Olson, thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure.
So I want to ask you, what is the surprising truth about violent video games?
Well, several things. First of all, one of the biggest surprises to me was that playing violent, by that I mean mature-rated video games, is a normative behavior nowadays for young teenage boys and for a lot of girls. By normative, I mean most of them are doing it on a regular basis. And my background is in public health. I have a doctorate in public health. So I look at this from kind of the big picture. And when I look around and see, wow, if this is a normal behavior, you know, well, what's not normal? And can I find some groups of kids who maybe I should keep a closer eye on? Because apparently, when I look out there and say, well, youth crime is down, violence is down, bullying appears to be stable or down, I'm not seeing other things that would suggest this huge change in exposure to violent video games is doing something to a lot of kids. Let me find the smaller number of kids, and how can I help them?
But we haven't been able to find that out, right? It's very difficult to do the research.
It really is. And one of the things is pretty obvious to anyone who's a gamer, which is that the games are changing all the time. And one of the things you like to do in research is follow people over time, which you call a longitudinal study, because that's the only way you can really tease out cause and effect as opposed to, you know, things happening at the same time and maybe they're linked, but what does it mean? And it's very hard to do that because of the constantly changing games and play patterns. A lot of the studies that have been done that got cited a lot in the press in past years were lab-based studies, you know, college freshmen taking Psych 101 and doing little 20-minute gameplay experiments of violent versus nonviolent and so on. And with that, you can't really generalize from something like that to a bunch of 12- and 13-year-old kids who are playing games that they pick in their own homes with friends usually and as long as they want over many years.
So you met with the vice president. What did he say to you? What did he want to know?
Well, the first thing he said to the group, it was 5 researchers and 10 industry people, roughly. The first thing he said was, look, I've seen the research, and I haven't seen evidence of a link between violent video game play and real-life violence. But the typical person out there, the public, thinks that there's a link between violent games and violence, or fears there's one. So that's basically why we were there, was to talk about that. And he wanted to know some about policy ideas that we might have, but especially he asked me what my research findings were.
And, I mean, as a parent, I just can't see how there wouldn't be a link between violent video games and violence. The thought of a teenage boy trying, you know, even though it's pretend, these video games are so realistic, mass killing people on a screen. I just don't see how that can't translate to regular life. Am I being too simplistic?
Well, I think that's the typical gut reaction. In fact, to the research I got, I did $1.5 million research project that was funded through the Office of Justice Programs, and it was initiated by a congressman who had seen, you know, film clips and so on from games like Grand Theft Auto and was thinking, just like you are, oh my gosh, you know, this looks terrible. There must be something bad here for our society or something bad for our young people. And one of the things that I found that was very reassuring to me in my research, I focused on 7th and 8th graders. I talked to a lot of boys who play violent games regularly, and they stressed over and over, I like the unreality of the games. I like that it can't happen. And the fact that they knew it was fake, that's what let them have fun with it. I think they saw it more like earlier generations saw Tales from the Crypt comic books or maybe Mad Magazine or things like that. And a couple of them volunteered that the thing that scares me is the TV news, because video games, you know, they're fake. The news is real.
That's very true. I guess what I'm thinking of, though, is, you know, Mad Magazine, that seems like pretty, you know, really harmless compared to when you're talking about that an eighth grader thinks it's really fun to pretend to kill a bunch of people very gruesomely. I guess just even the thought that they're even thinking about these things.
Well, remember, from their perspective, these aren't people. That's why it can be fun. It's really not that different from... I mean, if you look through history, I still remember being in second or third grade and reading the original Grimm's fairy tales. And those are violent.
Yeah.
I remember one story where there was a princess who kills her sister and throws her bones in the river and they rot, and someone makes a harp out of her bones. And the harp then is put at the palace and accuses the sister of killing her. I mean, I've never seen a video game that went that far, frankly.
Really?
Yeah. There are a few that, you know, there are a small number of games that are basically designed for a young person who wants to upset mom to play for a few minutes when she might be looking. And that's what, remember the Supreme Court decision about California's video game law, the game that was brought up again and again by California was a game called Postal, which is not at all popular, and none of the kids in my research were playing that game. And it's the kind of thing where you can, like, shove a cat on your gun as a silencer. You can shoot children, animals. You can do, and the, you know, the slogan, I think, for the next iteration was, you know, shoot those annoying hockey moms in the face. It was just all about upsetting people. And I think the reason it wasn't popular, because you can only, you know, get a kick out of that for a few minutes, even if you want to make someone mad.
Right.
And then it's like, well, what? This is just stupid. What's really interesting to me, my son, who is now a recent college grad, he was a young teen when I started this research, and he plays games like Hitman sometimes. You think Hitman, well, duh, that has to be a bad game for kids, and it is rated M, and I don't recommend the kids play it. But I asked him once, after watching him play a couple of versions of Hitman, do you kill anyone who's not a evil bad guy in this game? And he looked through it and said, you know, really the only person who's not like a nasty pimp or a murderer, someone who really has it coming, in a sense, was, I think, an evil journalist who kind of was collateral damage.
An evil journalist. Awesome. That's great. of course, the evil journalist needs to get it. So
right,
let's just talk then. Like, you know, I want to sum up, sort of look into your crystal ball and tell me what you think can feasibly happen.
I know one glaring gap in the research that I see, we don't know anything about kids you might call juvenile offenders. If we're concerned that violent games might encourage certain high-risk young people to hurt people or property, we ought to study those young people who have hurt people or property and see if their violent media consumption is different. I tried to do a study like that to follow up my earlier research, and I couldn't get funding. And it wouldn't be that hard to do, because that would at least give us a sense of, okay, if they are different, in what ways, and is there something we can do to reduce harm for kids who are especially living in, you know, high-risk neighborhoods, seeing real-life violence, who are at higher risk already for violence? You know, or if there isn't a difference, you know, if they're doing basically everything the same or consuming less violent media, that would be interesting to know also.
I mean, that doesn't seem like, that kind of seems like a no-brainer. Why is that hard to get funding? Why is that harder to fund than studying a huge cross range of kids who've never committed anything violent?
Well, it's really interesting. Well, for one thing, young people in general, and also people who are in jail, are protected classes for research. Because of horrible abuses in history with research, we have to be very careful and get, you know, Human Subjects Committee approval and so on. I did, in fact, have approval from a Human Subjects Committee to study a group of what they call post-adjudication juvenile offenders who had no pending charges, so they didn't have to worry about somehow incriminating themselves. And this was a group that was, I think, being helped with some anger management classes and so on through Massachusetts General Hospital, where I was based. And a judge said I could do it without getting parent permission. But it just wasn't something that the government funders at that time were interested in. I don't know why.
When you hear about a mass shooting, do you usually suspect that they've been watching a violent video game or playing one? And do you then learn that usually they have?
That's an interesting question. The issue with mass shootings and video games is that playing violent video games is a normative activity for young men and teenage boys. So I might suspect that they had played violent video games, like I might suspect that they had brushed their teeth that morning. It's not something. It's a very common behavior, and linking that
to
something
very
unusual.
Yeah, but I don't try to shoot someone with my toothbrush.
That's true. Interestingly, though, for example, when the Virginia Tech tragedy happened a couple years ago, there were a number of people who jumped into the press and said, oh, this guy must have been playing violent video games. And then when a report came out analyzing the details of the case, they found that, in fact, he didn't play violent video games. I think he played Sonic the Hedgehog when he was younger. And his college roommates were saying, yeah, we used to play games together in our dorm, and he would never join us playing video games. Mm. What he really did was go into his room and write about violent fantasies on his computer. In fact, when the FBI and Secret Service tried to do a profile of potential school shooters, the most common medium that they were interacting with was their own violent writings.
Dr. Cheryl Olson, thank you so much for your time.
Well, my pleasure. Great talking with you.
Dr. Cheryl Olson is the co-author of the book Grand Theft Childhood, The Surprising Truth About Violent Video Games and What Parents Can Do.